The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Yo, 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 welcome back here, UAB fans and college sports fans. You know, this is a show about the UAB sports family, but it's more than that because we pull back the curtain on all sports. And if you listen to our show every single week, it's called the UAB Director's Chair with Mark Ingram, who's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. You'll realize that we broaden our horizons. We talk about all things in college sports. First of all, how you doing, my friend? Of course, you're available to be heard on this radio station, TMZ, at least five times a week, and wherever you get your favorite podcast, right here in our YouTube channel. But how you doing this morning, partner? Everything good?
Yeah, man, I'm excellent. Thank you.
Fantastic. Just as we recorded the show, breaking news that one O.J. Simpson has just lost his life at the age of 76. His family has mentioned the fact that he is now dead at the age of 76. And when I just heard it, I was up at Fox 6, and it was breaking news just as we were about ready to talk about something else. And just as we were about ready to go on the air, it broke news. So we went straight OJ for about 11 minutes. And it was really interesting to get everyone's thoughts right off the bat. I mean, we didn't even have time to even digest what had just happened. And you are kind of in the same boat. I just mentioned to you because it just happened. But
yeah,
what's your initial thoughts on OJ Simpson dead at the age of 76?
I think it's really unfortunate that as incredible a player he was, that the only thing anybody ever thinks about is that tragic trial and, you know, his wife's murder and all that surrounds that. And that's not to be insensitive to any of the people involved in it, whether it was the Kardashian family or the Brown family and or the Simpson family and anybody else. It's just tragic, right? It's just, you know, but boy, O.J. Simpson as a football player was just a marvelous player and an icon, right? He was just an iconic guy that, I mean, think of this, he transitioned. He was such a dynamic player. He transitioned into acting. Yep. And some people, it's not unusual in the modern era for people to get into broadcasting, which is not terribly different, but it is different. And but he was so popular that people wanted to see him do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, boy, we can sell some movie tickets if we put this guy in the movie. And he was in, you know, kind of made appearances in several.
Well, and I think, too, he was kind of the beginning of the NIL, was he not? As far as in a guy who took his professional, because we didn't have athletes doing TV commercials, did we? I mean, I don't really remember.
You don't remember, right?
Yeah, but I just remember him doing the Hertz commercials. Man, those were huge commercials. Huge.
Now you know, you think about like Joe Namath did.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of that similar era, right? The same era.
Yeah, a little before probably Joe was. But I mean, it was very, I mean, there wasn't a mass appeal.
No.
You know, and I'm not even sure what Joe, I remember for some reason, I remember Jim Palmer doing, underwear commercials. Remember Jim Palmer of the Baltimore Orioles, good looking guy, blue eyed guy. And I remember him doing, Hanes commercials cause he was such a good looking, pitcher for the Baltimore Orioles. No, you know, it's, whenever you see somebody that, and again, it was amazing because, right now, if you take the top 10 podcast in the country, I would venture to guess that 9 of the top 10 are Tony Curry podcasts only because we have the best podcast. But in all seriousness, most of them are crime series podcasts. Almost every single one of them are crime. I mean, Dateline's obviously a huge show, Forensic Files, yeah, huge show. If you pull up top 10 podcasts every single week, 8 out of the 10 are usually crime podcast. And I really believe that, you know, it all started with, you know, where were you when the white Bronco was on the interstate? It all started with that. And I'm sure there were some crime shows before that, but that really brought to light the reality aspect of what a crime show should be because we were watching it in real time.
Yeah, you're right. It was unfolding. And I think I was at school. And but it's not unlike where were you when the space shuttle blew up?
Mm.
And where were you when John Kennedy was assassinated? These Martin Luther King, where were you? These moments in time that were sort of history markers in our country.
Yeah.
And that's my point, is it's just really unfortunate that when you think about O.J. Simpson, you go straight to the white Bronco and all that. the trial that lasted, what, a year or something. I mean, seemed like it went on for 10 years, but I think it was a full year, maybe.
It was 30 years ago, 1994. And then, of course, they came out. Yeah. In 1995 is when the verdict came out that he was acquitted. And again, you bring up a great point. You know, you think to yourself, okay, you idiot, regardless of whether you think he was innocent or not, you got away with something. It may not have been murder, but you got away with something. We know there were bruises and bumps. And then for him not to be able to stay out of trouble for the rest of his life, he didn't pay a dime, as far as I know, of restitution when it came to the civil suit. He was playing golf he was doing signings. His autograph was worth more after the O.J. Simpson thing than before. And then he still couldn't stay out of trouble. And you're kind of like, you know, I don't ever like to see anyone lose their life, but I don't see anybody boohooing today. The fact that he's passed away at the age of 76, I think he pretty much got everything that he had coming.
Well, he was, like I said, he was a marvelous player and really helped put the NFL on the map. I mean, he was one of those sort of Bart Starr type guys, Joe Namath type guys that really helped make the NFL what the NFL has grown to become.
Mm-hmm. The NAIA has essentially banned transgender athletes. We're going to talk about that here in just a second. I do want to go back, though. We're just a couple of days removed from March Madness. Again, just a fantastic tournament. UConn didn't make it very exciting because they're just so flipping good. And I was talking to several of my friends, and what's great about that tournament is that it does have the Cinderella factor. There's no other sport where Cinderella is more factor-minded than it is in March Madness. And we love that. And we love the upsets. But do we like the fact that the overall number one seed wins the tournament? So sometimes I'm like, I love seeing the best team in a sport win their World Series, win their Super Bowl, win whatever that is. You know, for a while in the NFL, man, wild card teams are winning Super Bowls left and right. And you're like, okay, what's wrong with this picture? How in the world, you know, on any given Sunday, right? But what's your thoughts on the number one overall seed winning and really it wasn't even a question of whether they were the best team in college basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I think it says that all season everybody had it right.
Yeah.
In terms of who they were and how good they really were. And, you know, I went back and I looked. They did lose three times, and I thought, "Wow, how did they lose?" You know, and you go back and I remember Seton Hall was one of the teams that beat them, and I've forgotten the other two now. And but before the game, I pulled up their record, you know, their schedule to see who else they lost to, and I just remember thinking, "Gosh, who could possibly beat these guys?" They lost by 19 points to somebody, and I just was like, how could you have lost? Because they were just so dominant, and they were good inside and outside. And look, man, Purdue was good too. And so I'm glad ultimately that the two best teams got to sort of clash head to head there in the championship, made for a great game. I thought the tournament, as it usually is, was great. I still contend that it is great because it's a legitimate tournament of teams from every conference. I wish there were more of that. As I've said, I think we should double the field to 128. And then that really makes it exciting nationally. Mm-hmm. You know, when we try to isolate just down to a couple of conferences, it reduces the national appeal. The NFL is great because it has national appeal. You've got, even though the LA market is bigger than the Buffalo market, they are both, they have equal opportunity to go and win. And it's not, there's no eye test. You don't ever hear that when they're trying to choose who goes to the playoffs in the NFL. Nobody's talking about the eye test.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody's talking about, oh, well, they got their quarterback hurt. They're not the same team anymore. No, man, if they qualify, they qualify, and they might go lose the first game if their quarterback got hurt, but they're in it because they won or they didn't win. And that's the spirit of competition. Get out there on the field and play. Get out there on the court and play and prove that you're the best. If you're the best, you'll win.
Oh, man, I am.
You got to prove that.
Yeah.
If, you know, otherwise, why are we even playing? Let's just create a ranking and say, well, here's the championship.
I am so excited to have you on today because it could have been a couple of days ago and it would have been even better. But the whole John Calipari situation to me is just amazing.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, and everyone's been reaching out to me going, what do you think about the John Calipari situation? I got friends of mine. I lived in Kentucky for 3 years. I lived in Louisville where it's 75% Kentucky in Louisville. I mean, even in Louisville, it's 75% Kentucky.
Really?
And they were asking me questions and stuff. And I said, you know, I haven't been a John Calipari fan for a long period of time. Just by the numbers alone, first six seasons, four Final Fours, wins a national title in 2012, hasn't been back to a Final Four in 10 years, has won one NCAA game since 2019 in four tournaments. And of course, we know about the St. Peter's and getting trounced in the NIT. And so this did not surprise me at all. And quite frankly, after I had time to digest the shock value in it, everybody was a winner to me. What's your initial, as an athletic director, was this something, and I know him and Mitch didn't get along. I know there were a lot of troubles there behind closed doors with him, but it sounds like, you know, John was like, you're not firing me, so I'm going to get out while I can. And he landed on his feet in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, look, Hunter Yurachek, who's the AD at Arkansas, is a great guy and a great AD and a great friend of mine. And Mitch Barnhart, I was an intern for Mitch. He's the AD at Kentucky. I interned for Mitch when I was in college. These are two great people who are great at their job and have proven that over a long period of time. So I don't have any insider knowledge. I don't know. So me saying those things is irrelevant, I guess. I agree with you. I think that Kentucky is a really, they have high expectations. So it's a hard job. It's not easy, but you could say, well, it's an easy job because they put so much emphasis in basketball in Kentucky that they have the resources, they have great facilities, they have an incredible fan base for basketball. So they've got a lot of things ready for you to go be successful. The hard part is you got to be successful. Mm-hmm. And Calipari was successful in a lot of ways, but basketball coaches, comes back to, I think we should double the field. Basketball coaches are judged almost entirely on getting to the tournament and how do you do in the tournament. And what you said about, you know, it's been 10 years since they were in the Final Four, which, by the way, it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, the Final Four is really, really hard, but hadn't been there in 10 years and hadn't won a tournament. The part that where they have not won a tournament game in 5 years?
One game in 4 years, yeah.
One in four. That's probably the part that really chaps people the most. And I don't know how many SEC titles they've won in his tenure, but it's not what it probably could have been, again, based on their fan expectations. So, again, not speaking for Coach Calipari, who is a great coach, or Mitch or Hunter, but my assumption, being a fan, you know, looking from the outside, is that the fan base may have grown a little tired of that. Mm-hmm. And as far as his relationship with Mitch, having a great relationship with your coach is not an easy thing to do. You know, even when things are great, they're not really ever great. There's always some challenge in, there's always some challenge in that relationship, meaning unless you can provide absolutely everything the coach wants, money for staff, money for travel, money for recruiting, money for them, you know, unless you can provide like literally everything and always say yes, which is never the case, mm-hmm. then there's some challenge, you know? And so, you know, balancing that and trying
Are you saying that most coaches are constantly asking for more?
Yeah. Every coach is asking for more. Look, even if you have the most of whatever the it is,
yeah,
you're trying to stay that way, right? So even if you have the most, you're like, well, you need more because the school down the street, they know how much we have. So now this coming year, they're going to have what we have. So if we want to have the most, we got to keep ratcheting that up. Sure. And so that's just impossible. I mean, just.
Well, and one of the numbers that came up too is the Arkansas had $5.13 million in their NIL collective coffers. And I'm like, okay, $5 million. I mean, at Arkansas, don't tell me they couldn't come up with that in 15 minutes at Kentucky. I don't think that was the point. But I think to your point too, and I always like to look at somebody and have an exit, you know, you're not going to have an exit resume, obviously, with him, or an exit interview. But was it a good hire? And I can't honestly say it was or it wasn't. I mean, and he's taken every team he's gone, UMass, Memphis, and Kentucky, to a Final Four, and he's won and he won a national title. And usually when you win a national title, you get to go out the way you want to, and he did. He's going to Arkansas. Yeah. I don't think they would have fired him, but I do think it was getting tumultuous to the point. And you could kind of feel, you know, about 10 years ago, he said something that was really interesting. He said something along the lines, if it wasn't about national titles, it was about his players, children's being taken care of. And at that point, it was like $14 billion that his previous players, you know, he's gotten 35 first round guys and 46 players going to the NBA. He's made a crap ton of money for his players. And that's really, really important, because it is more important than a national title, is what you do with the rest of your life. Okay. I get that. But I think that kind of rubbed people the wrong way a little bit, because if you are that good and you have that many first round guys, you should be winning more games at the collegiate level. And it wasn't happening. And I don't know if this is I still go back to the Kansas game, the national title game, when they're up by 9, and was asked about, you know, what were they really bad at? Hitting free throws. And he's like, we'll make our free throws when we need to. Well, they didn't, and they lost that game. It was the big choke job. He should have had 2 national titles. And from that point on, I just kind of looked at him as a different coach. I don't know if he's a lousy X and O's coach. I don't know if he's a great recruiter. Maybe he's a little bit of everything, but there's no doubt he's a Hall of Famer. But good for Arkansas. And I don't have any doubt. You tell me. Do you have any doubt that Arkansas will be a Final Four team within the next 5 or 6 years?
No, I mean, I think it's a great hire for Arkansas. I think it's an opportunity, sort of a refresh opportunity for Coach Cal. It's sometimes just the right thing to do. You know, it's just, hey, you know, I think, the school that I'm leaving would be better off to restart with somebody else. No hard feelings. I'm going to go over here, restart. Maybe I need a recharge. Like, you know, everybody needs a little bit of a recharge sometimes. And you know, the whole NIL thing, it's complicated, man. And it's, while there are some schools that are doing really well, not every school that you assume is doing well is doing well. Mm-hmm. It's a polarizing discussion. There's a lot of people who really hate it. There's some places have been able to sort of adapt to that and go, look, I hate it, but we have to, you know, and that's where I'm hoping we are here at UAB, is we've had people say that they hate it. I myself have said that he hates it, and I do hate it, but it's where we are, man. Yep. We got to figure it out. Yep. Like, it doesn't change the fact that it exists. So, you know, we launched the Magic City Impact. We've got our infrastructure in place. We have a board of directors around that. And now we got to raise some money around it. And it's not instead of the other thing. It's a both and proposition that everybody is in, and no one is not raising money for facilities. I can send you articles after articles every day about some school that got a gift for their facility, or they broke ground, or they cut a ribbon. And that's from Florida State to Kansas to Quinnipiac. And they literally are. And Southern Cal just broke ground on a stadium for lacrosse and soccer. I mean, we're doing it. And again, from Southern Cal to Quinnipiac, everybody's doing it. So you still have to have that infrastructure for fans to enjoy, for players to be part of the, it's still part of the recruiting process. And so that's just added a layer of challenge for everybody. I have no doubt, like you, it seems as if Kentucky could raise money in a collective to be suitable. Cal has been a phenomenal recruiter. Like you, why aren't they, you know, getting farther? Is it assistant coaches or exes? And I don't know, man. But whatever it is, I have no doubt, like you said, that he'll continue to be successful wherever he's at. So
what does that say about a program? Because it's weird, because I think a lot of people are saying this is going to be a very important hire. And I would certainly agree with that. Obviously, it's Kentucky. It was like that for Alabama when Coach Saban went on his way. And I know that Nate Oates has already come out and said he's not interested. I don't know that his phone even rang. I like the fact that he said, hey, by the way, I'm not interested in the Kentucky job. I don't think anyone asked. Yeah. I don't think anyone asked, Coach. Right. But I appreciate you. I appreciate you letting you know you're not interested. I don't think.
Hey, Tony, I'm not interested in being the basketball coach at Kentucky.
It was so funny. I was like,
I'm not a candidate for the job at Kentucky.
Louis, you just want to Final Four. You know, I'll give you everything you got, but I'm like, put your hand down. They're not going to hire you. Now, Bruce Pearl, I think it would be like the greatest hire of all time. I just think he is a great fit there. I think they love him. I think his crap would fly there. I think it'd be fantastic. Billy Donovan, I don't know. And then of course, Dan Hurley, he's just won back-to-back championships at UConn. Not so fast. I mean, but when you talk about a program that's won 6 national titles, which is double every other program since 1999, and UConn, the pressure's going to be on, say, a Kentucky like that. But when you're winning 28 to 32 ball games every year for 15 years, and all you have is one national title, it reminds me a little bit of, the Braves, when they won one national title. They won the division 14 years straight, but only won one World Series. I don't know what that says about your program, and I know that they're aching up there for another national title. But
you just got to know, again, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing some really good things. And that's the problem with us as fans is, again, we kind of lose sight of how hard it really is. And the margin, look, when you look at those 68 teams that were in the final.
It's hard, but it's not that hard to make it to a Sweet 16 if you're John Calipari. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just saying that the margin between the worst team in the tournament and the best of the team in the tournament isn't as great as you think. I mean, they're all really good. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't have gone farther. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just pointing out it's really hard. And, you know, Kentucky, that job, man, like they got to go try to dig up James Naismith. I mean, their expectation, again, is we have to have whatever the very best out there is. That there's only – have you ever been to a game there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I lived there for 3 years. I lived in the Louisville area, so I was there at that crosstown thing.
You know, Rupp Arena, the Dean Smith Center in at Chapel Hill. I've never been to Cameron at Duke, but it's not as big, but I'm sure it's the same. Allen Fieldhouse at Kansas, and then is it called Memorial at Indiana?
Yep.
Those places are unlike every single place in the country. I mean, even the places that are doing – listen, Tennessee is doing really well right now in basketball. And when they're full, it's great. And it's still not like those places.
No.
And I listen, that's my alma mater. I want them to do well. I'm not, that's not a disrespect. It's just not the same, man. The passion, the intensity, watching all those Kansas fans do the Rock Chalk Jayhawk thing and they're moving their arms back and forth. Kentucky has stuff that they do that all and the fans are totally engaged. It's not just about fans being in attendance, like their engagement level of stuff they've done for 50 years or more, you know, just fan cheers and the chants and the arm movements and what they're doing. It's like, it's a scene, man.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, you cannot have a conversation at a UK football or a UK basketball game. No. You can't.
You're like,
what do you mean? I mean, you're watching and you don't want to have a conversation.
No.
People aren't talking to you and it's loud from tip to the end of the ballgame. It's just an amazing thing. Here's Mark Ingram, the athletic director of the UAB Blazers. It's called the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week right here. Of course, go to UABSports.com. UABSports.com to find out everything that's going on in the world of UAB athletics. Before we get into our worst songs of all time, something we got into last week, and I know you've probably got a nice list. I cannot wait to hear some of your songs. The NAIA essentially banned transgender athletes from women's sports. Pretty big move on the first major platform, if you will, to make a call on this. It was voted 20-0 to not allow this to happen at that level. Your thoughts?
Well, thanks for bringing up a real softball there, Tony. That's nice.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, you know, I think there's some international federations, like swimming federations. I think like the IOC, the International Olympic Committee. I think there are some other groups like that have said the same or virtually the same. Yeah, it's a bold move. And, you know, as I used the word polarizing earlier, I mean, this is a tough topic to have in any public forum. You're going to offend somebody or seem insensitive in any conversation around this. But what they're saying, I guess, I read a kind of a piece of the article and not a deep dive, but I guess ultimately they've decided that, you know, biological men should not compete against biological females, regardless of how they identify. And again, that is polarizing and upsets certain groups of people and the transgender community, obviously. And but they, you know, through whatever experience or discussion they had, and you said a 20-0 vote, they felt strongly about it and wanted to make a public statement about it and felt they needed to do so in advance of of being faced with an issue the way the NCAA was faced with the issue when the swimmer Leah Thomas from the University of Pennsylvania wound up in the women's NCAA as a biological male who had competed against men at one point at Pennsylvania.
And won championships there too. Yeah.
And then won the national title tied, which is impossible to do, by the way, in swimming, tied a young lady named Riley Gaines from the University of Kentucky, back to Kentucky here, in the NCAA finals, and they tied for the national championship. So, and this person, Leah Thomas, is 6'4" or something, you know, and so very physically different. Forget about the politics around it and what's right and wrong and feelings and so forth. Very physically different than her and Riley, I mean. And so anyway, like I said, I guess the NIA presidents felt like they needed to get in front of it before it became a thing somewhere down the line and did so.
Yeah, and I think you and I actually had this discussion. There may come a day where we have transgender games. I don't know. I don't know. It's amazing because we're talking such a small percentage of athletes here, and it's it's taking up the most time to talk about. And I get, you know, some of the smallest voices are the loudest, but I for the average fan, it's not really that big of a deal. But obviously, if you're a transgender individual, it's the world to you, and I certainly understand that. But I think something had to be done, and obviously, I don't think we're done discussing that particular situation. But again, it does not affect a lot of us. But you know, if I've got a daughter who's got a scholarship to Penn, and she's being beaten by a person who used to be a male, I probably have an issue with it. I probably have a problem with it.
Well, I watched some of the interviews from Riley Gaines, the young lady from Kentucky, about it. And there are some things there that are, you know, create concern. Some things that happened, forget the competition piece, but they shared a locker room and, you know, that kind of thing. And the locker rooms had been relabeled as all gender, which meant that any person, male or female, could go into the locker room, take Leah Thomas out, who was identifying as a woman, went to the women's locker room because they identified it as a woman. Any male judge or, I mean, had I been working that tournament, that championship as a volunteer, as a man who identifies as a man, I could have walked into that locker room.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's some things that you know, were concerning, that, and now there's a lawsuit about it with the NCAA. So not to speak too much about that, but that, you know, these are the things that you get into. And yeah, what about the rights of the biological women who identify as women, and do they have rights and so on? And it is a messy conversation that's not easy.
So I had this conversation. Mark Ingram joins us here on our YouTube channel here, the UAB director's chair, with a singer-songwriter friend of mine. He said, Tone, every song's in four different pots. You either have a song that's just a great song, great song that was written, and it's just a great song. You have songs that evidently a lot of people don't like, but they give you earworms. You know, those things where you can't get them out of your head. You got songs that are just crap. They're just not good songs. And then you have other songs that are decent songs, that are good songs, and for some reason we just don't like them. It's not because we've heard them. You know, a lot of people are like, I bet you hate, you know, Stairway to Heaven. No, I don't hate Stairway to Heaven. I mean, I have the most respect for Stairway to Heaven. I love that song. I love Freebird. Have I played it a million times in my life? Yes. Can I still turn it up loud? It still sounds good sometimes. Absolutely. But it doesn't bother me. Just for sake of bother me, there's a song called Good Feeling from Florida.
Yeah.
That drives me crazy. I don't know why it's a hit. I understand it's a good song. I know why people love that song, but when I hear that song, it just grates on my nerves. I mean, when we were doing the opening drive, that they used to play it for me every morning just to get on my nerves, and it would actually make me see red. And there's a couple other songs that I just didn't like. So I threw at you last week, and I gave you a week to do some homework of some songs that you just don't like. For whatever reason, whether you just think it's dumb, it's stupid, or maybe it's just melodically speaking, it just doesn't jive with something in your brain. And you're like, I don't like this song.
Yeah. Well, I quickly went, if you remember, to the Macarena.
Yes.
It's horrible. Yeah. And
a lot of people hate that song.
But you pressed me about rock songs because you were talking about the song Dream On by Aerosmith, which is a classic hit that, you know, people love, but you just don't like. Yeah. And so I really started thinking more specifically about some rock songs that, that are that way for me.
Oh, good.
And I don't know. I'll start from the bottom. So anything from Slaughter, I don't like. I don't like the band Slaughter.
Okay.
Would you call the song, I don't know if this is a rock song, but REM, what genre do they fit into?
They're classic rock. And by the way, this whole topic came up from Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart. That's another one of the songs where I just never liked that song. I had it on a KTEL album when I was like 16, 17 years old. And of course, with the eclipse this past week, that song was played about a million times. And everyone loves that song. And yeah, I don't like that song.
Every now and then you fall apart. I get it. I get it.
Exactly.
So Losing My Religion by R.E.M.
Oh, yeah.
And when that mandolin starts playing in the beginning, I can't hit power on the radio.
Oh, man. You know what? You know what? You're... You just nailed one for me too. That is one song that I just cannot.
Monster hit. Let's just stop.
Yeah, and I could do Shiny Happy People all day long. I can, but I cannot do that song. You're right, Losing My Religion, because I used to have to play that song like once a day.
Yeah. How about Susudio by Phil Collins?
Susudio was one of those songs when it first came out. We kind of laughed at it because, you know, everything he'd done up to that point was a classic rock song, and it was it was Genesis, and so that was kind of a dance song. I mean, I actually remember there was like an EP, a dance remix version of that came out. You could actually like hear that at Jitterbugs and stuff. And so it's not that I don't like it. It's up tempo. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's not one of my favorite songs, but I could sit through it. I could sit through it. I could sing along with it. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah. It's got a good beat and you can dance to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so Phil Collins, yes, to your point, had been with Genesis, kind of a rock guy. So that song in particular and kind of that era for him is probably like REM. They're just like on the edge. Is it rock or is it not rock? Yeah. So here's one that was definitely considered sort of a hair band that I can't stand, which is the song Don't Treat Me Bad by Firehouse.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a piece of crap. That is a horrible song.
How about Once Bitten, Twice Shy by Greg White?
Let me tell you something. that song drives me crazy. I used to like that song. Until the fire. When their band killed like 200 people, remember that Rhode Island? Remember the fire they had up in Rhode Island where the band was playing and they had fireworks going off and people couldn't get out? It was horrible. I don't think like 200 people died.
Yeah,
and I didn't even know the band was still together. There's a radio station here in town, the Eagle. It's a classic rock station. They play that song like 15 times a day. I don't know why. It's just and quite frankly, even the lyrics in that song make me uneasy. It talks about taking advantage of a young girl, a groupie. And it makes me feel nasty when I hear that song. You're exactly right. When I hear that song, I tune that thing out. That's another great one. What about Simple Minds, Don't You Forget About Me? That's another one of the songs where I'm like, and it's not a classic. We played it. It's considered classic rock. I don't know why. But that song, I hear that song when that drum right off the bat, I cannot turn the station fast enough. I can't.
Was that song in, like when you say that and I think about that song, I immediately go to, I don't even know if this was in the soundtrack, but movies like The Breakfast Club.
Right, I think it was in The Breakfast Club. Yeah, it was in that movie.
I immediately think of like that and Sweet 16 Candles. Mm-hmm.
It was in that movie. Yeah. It was in The Breakfast Club, I believe. But I always heard that song and I'm like, well, why are we playing the song? And it's a classic rock song. I don't understand that. I don't get that.
How do you like Cherry Pie by Warrant?
You know, I never really liked the song a lot when it was a hit. So now I can probably hear it. And get off on it. I'm a 58-year-old father of an 11-year-old now. She turns 12 tomorrow.
Yeah.
And when you have a daughter in your family, the songs that you used to really thought were cool.
She's only 17.
Yeah. It's really bad. And again, I can't believe the Once Bitten, Twice Shy, you nailed it, because there is one stanza in there that it's just like, it almost makes me feel disgusting that I'm actually listening to that song. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, what are we talking about here?
Warrant was a very popular, very successful band that I never liked. Great White, I just wasn't into. I really didn't love them. I only liked some of the Whitesnake stuff. And these bands were all super popular.
Whitesnake was good though. I mean, they had great artists. They had great players. They wrote great songs. It wasn't, I consider them a hair band just because they had hair, but I mean, David Coverdale is a hell of a singer.
And then Steve Vai, one of my favorites, was their guitarist for a while.
I can do without Cherry Pie. I mean, I get it. I mean, I guess that would be like, our Foreigner's Hot Blooded for our time, right? Wasn't Hot Blooded kind of like, just young, hot, just talking about, getting after it. And
I got two more songs by the same band.
I love
it. These are mega hits.
Okay.
And it's going to upset. It's going to upset some folks.
I love it.
Armageddon It and Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. I cannot stop.
Oh, really? Really?
They're terrible. I think they're basic as heck. They're sort of these anthem style songs, which I don't dislike, but I think those songs are horrible.
Really?
Seeing
I Pour Some Sugar on Me, obviously, that's an anthem. I mean, we'll never hear that at Protective.
I'll be the only guy that when they strike that up, turns around and has to leave the room. But everybody else will be like, yeah,
that's, I like it. I mean, I'd listen to it, but I mean, it's one of the songs where it's almost hard to go a week without hearing that song. Now, Armageddon is a little interesting because that wasn't as big of a hit. I go back and see, I was a huge Def Leppard fan when they had a song called Let It Go, Saturday Night. They had an album called High and Dry.
Listen, Pyromania was great. And then it went, and it's, it's when that drummer lost his arm and all that stuff. I mean, it's kind of together, I totally thought it was cool that they were able to let him keep playing with the band and he was figured out how to play with his feet. And like, that was amazing. And hats off to the guy. But the music became super basic and I didn't love it.
All right. If you got any songs that you hate and you want to share those along, we say strongly dislike. We know hate's a strong word. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net or hit Mark up on his Twitter account and he'd be more than happy to respond back to you, man. Get after it. We'll catch up next week, my friend.
All right, pal. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.